You know Dasher and Dancer and Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donner and
Icarus.
But do you recall the most famous
Rider
of all?
Rider Blake!
All right, welcome back to another episode of Rider Break, the official podcast of EgoDevil.com. I'm your host, EgoDevil, and this is episode 2, the Christmas episode. We got a lot to talk about this week, so let's get rolling. All right, first off, I want to reiterate my sincerest thanks to everyone who tuned in for the first episode. I got a great response and a lot of helpful feedback, and I was really happy to see how well it went over. The positive reaction and all the retweets I got felt really good, so thank you everyone. Hopefully I can make this a regular thing on a bi-weekly or even a weekly basis starting next year. I also want to thank everybody who sent in questions and ideas for that and for this episode. Keep them coming. I will do my best to get to all of them in future episodes. And there's a couple I'll probably bring up again as topics for our whole episode discussion, since there's a lot to say about them. So thanks again, everyone. And speaking of questions and such, I got a couple great follow-up ones on Twitter, Facebook, and email that I'll get to in a bit. But first, I want to talk briefly about the last two episodes of Forze, episode 14 that aired on December 11th and episode 15 from last weekend. Okay, so in regards to episode 14, we saw the conclusion of the whole Miura/Scorpion Zodiarts storyline. Sort of. The Scorpion Zodiarts actually technically survived at the end and will presumably come back at some point, which is pretty cool because he/she is a interesting character and I'd like to see more of him, which seems like it's going to be the case, so that's cool. But as far as Miura's storyline goes, I think it's ended, and it was a pretty good conclusion. He's back in school now and happily in the photography club, I guess. I like that they came up with a good reason why he doesn't just join the Rider Club like everybody else has, because they're going to need to do that a couple more times, I think, if they continue the trend of this show of having angry or disgruntled students be the monsters of the week. I think overall this storyline, this episode and the last one, really kind of ramped up the danger level of the show, which is probably one of the things that it had kind of been lacking up to this point. It was really, like I said last time, Forze is a very kind of lightweight show. I mean, it's overly comedic, and the monsters are threatening, but you never really get the feeling that they're actually going to kill anyone. At least with the first couple, progressively they kind of would get more and more dangerous. But especially in these episodes, it really feels like a life or death situation. The whole subplot of Gentaro and JK getting poisoned, Jake I should say, getting poisoned, that was really cool. And the whole idea of using the medical switch without actually being able to become Forze was pretty neat, and I like that they made it seem like this really dangerous thing, so it's not like a plot device that they're going to use too often, I think. But as a one-time-only thing, it was cool to see. Kengo puts on the Forze driver and is able to use the power of the switch anyway, I guess, through the, like, power glove setup that he created. But, yeah, that was pretty cool. I enjoyed that. And one thing I noticed, if I'm not mistaken, the final battle in this episode is filmed at the same place that was used way back in the second episode of Blade, the first time Chalice appears and fights the plant undead with all those kind of weird sculptures. It's the weird sort of almost like a Stonehenge-looking place. Except back then, I think it was all covered in snow. And also in this episode, we got our first real glimpse at the Libra Zodiarts, who was pretty cool. And I like his power, the idea of him being able to shapeshift, and well, as we see next episode, he shapeshifts, but in this one he actually makes somebody else appear differently, which was a total surprise and not something I was expecting. And so it was a pretty nice twist on the whole idea of getting to see the monster's true identity when they're defeated. Okay, so moving on to episode 15, which I guess is going to be the first half of the Christmas storyline for this show. This one was pretty good too. As usual, when you have the first part of a story, I kind of feel, especially with modern Kamen Rider, I really need to see both halves of a storyline to kind of get the whole picture of it. But just take it on its own. It's still a pretty good episode. The monster was really cool and felt a lot like somebody, kind of almost like a leftover from Kamen Rider X. It reminded me a lot of the monster Achilles from that show. And just the whole design was really cool with the snakes on the arm and how he turns things into stone and all that, the Perseus guy. That was pretty neat. And as for the whole the singing club storyline, I mean, that was pretty funny. And the fact that the monster is this kid who is trying to do his paintings and he can't concentrate because everything. That's an interesting idea. But I think what this episode is really kind of almost about is, I mean, beyond that storyline, is also this bigger storyline going on with the Scorpion Zodiac, kind of scheming to, you know, how can she get back into that? How can she fall back into favor with the big guys? And we get to see a little of her backstory, which is pretty cool, where I think they used the Smilodon dopant as what the form she used to be. That's what it looked like. But yeah, it's a pretty promising start, and it'll be interesting to see the next episode, which is going to air on December 25th. So I'm assuming it'll be some kind of tie into Christmas anyway. That's what they were hinting at this time. So yeah, so far, so good with this show. I think it gets better and better each week, really. I mean, progressively. Like, the first episode was really good, and it's gotten better now. And it's... I'm still not sure whether, you know, it's since it's still the early days and the show isn't over yet, I can't really say it's better than O's or worse than O's or anything like that. I'd say I'm enjoying it about equally, but time will tell whether it turns out to be one of the greats, which is what I think O's was. That's one of my favorite Rider series ever, I would have to say, and certainly my favorite of the last couple of years. But so far, Forze is turning out to be pretty cool. Okay, so moving on from that, there's a couple questions I got on Facebook, Twitter, that I'll talk about briefly. Some of these are pretty big, and actually I would like to, or I will at some point, get into them more in depth, but we'll go through each one as it comes. All right, first up, Eric on Facebook asks, is there any way you can give your thoughts on the titles released by JN Productions eventually, specifically Kamen Rider V3 and Kikaider? Good question. I think a lot of people already know about them, but if you don't, here's some context. For the past couple years, JN Productions in Hawaii has been making and selling official Region 1 English subtitle DVDs of a couple 1970s Toei tokusatsu series, including Jinzo Ninken Kikaider, Kikaider 01, Inazuman, and Kamen Rider V3. All series, all of those, I believe they aired in Hawaii in the 70s, if I'm not mistaken. They're released through a site called Generation Kikaider that I'll be sure to put in the show notes. You should definitely check it out. The original Kikaider was released on individual volumes, and the others are all available as full series box sets. Okay, I should probably preface this by saying that I'm going to be coming into this one a little bit biased because I helped make the Kamen Rider V3 DVDs in a sense. I wrote some stuff that ended up as extra features on them. So of course I'm going to, you know, highly recommend it, but you know, just so you know where I'm coming from on that one. But And I have to once again thank Auguste Ragon for contacting me and giving me the opportunity to actually, you know, appear on a Kamen Rider DVD in some format anyway. Basically, J&P made what I think a lot of people really want, and that's legit subtitled tokusatsu releases outside of Japan. That's something that was pretty much inconceivable a couple decades ago, but now here we are. I know a lot of people are always kind of saying we should email Toei or Tsuburaya or whoever and ask them to start releasing these shows outside Japan, subtitled and all that, and I mean, that right there is a whole discussion about, you know, whether it's financially even possible or, you know, economically possible, all that stuff. That's something I think kind of feel like I really would want to talk about with other people, because, I mean, I could give my own take on it, and that's that it's pretty hard. I mean, realistically, I think the only way you're going to see a company like Toei releasing subtitled Kamen Rider and Sentai in the U.S. anyway is if they decide they want to do it. I mean, like, they have to make the first step, and we could, you know, we could write a million letters and emails and things like that, but I don't know if that would actually happen. I think they would have to say, let's give this a shot, and there would have to be some licensor, I guess, in America that would, you know, ask them and pursue the whole thing. I mean, because that's what JNP did, is they wanted to put Kikaider back on TV in Hawaii and sell it on DVD and everything, so they went to Toei, I believe, and secured the rights. And they managed to do it for a couple other shows, which is really a bonus. I mean, just the fact that they were able to do Kikaider is amazing in itself, and a huge accomplishment, really. And then that they were able to put them out on DVD and do it so well. You know, it would be great to get shows like Kuga, Agito, Kabuto, Oz, you know, and so on, getting this kind of treatment. I don't know if it'll happen in my lifetime, but hopefully someday. That's all I can say. Now, if you read my Ishinomori Week articles from earlier this year, you already know how I feel about these shows, you know, in regards to Kikaider 01 Inazuman. As for V3, it's one of my favorite writer series ever, so of course I like that one. So they're all great shows. You know, I really can't say much more than that, other than, you know, they're all 70s shows, they're all from the old days, and if you like that stuff, then you really can't go wrong with these DVDs. But as for the DVDs themselves, I think it's safe to say they're some of the best releases that tokusatsu TV shows have gotten in the U.S. I do know that there's a couple original Ultraman sets out there, although I don't know which ones are considered to be the best, and I've heard some things about it, that there's some questionable legality to them. I don't really know the whole story, but Iron King and Red Baron also got pretty widespread releases, and I think you can pick them up for pretty cheap, actually, the last I saw. And there's another show called Fight Dragon, which is not your usual tokusatsu series, but it's made by some of the same people. I believe the whole thing is written by Igami Masaru, who is my favorite Kamen Rider writer of all time, so that's one that's worth checking out. I actually have not seen it yet, but it's on the list, because anything written by Igami, I'll watch, pretty much. Yeah, and of course there's Kamen Rider the First, but that's getting into movies, and, you know, if we go there, then that brings in Godzilla and Gamera, and that's a whole nother discussion in regards to the quality of those DVDs, and, you know, there are some great ones, but that's the movies. But sticking to the TV shows, what I think the JN Productions DVDs really have going for them is there's a particular level of professionalism, and I'd actually argue that their releases, they could go toe-to-toe with the Japanese ones in terms of the design, the extras, just the whole package overall. I mean, they really feel like high-quality DVDs. Now, I do know a big stumbling block for a lot of people with those is the price, especially on V3, which is usually around $150, and right now I think it's down to $135 with the sale that they've got going on until the end of the year. And, yeah, I mean, that's usually kind of, that's the point where people say, well, I don't know. Yeah, I admit, it's a lot. But, you know, also consider, for that much, that price, you get 52 episodes plus the extras. In Japan, the V3 DVD box originally cost around $500 plus, and I still see it for around $300 and up. And then they re-released the show a couple of years later on individual volumes, but to get all of those, it still ended up being, you know, way more than the JNP set. So really, it is the cheapest way to get V3 right now is in America. So make of that what you will. And like I said, you know, I helped make the set, so I am going to come into this kind of biased and say it's worth the money. It's worth every penny. It's a great set of a great show. But, you know, I understand in this day and age, money isn't something you can just throw around all the time. So, I would definitely say it's worth the money. It's worth the investment. If you've never seen V3 before, but you're interested in this set, like you kind of feel like this would be something I'd probably like, but I'm just not sure. You know, I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know that if you look hard enough, it's possible to find all of V3 online somewhere, subtitle or not. I would say give the first four episodes a go, because I think they're really good. And if you enjoy those, then you'll enjoy the whole series for sure. But, you know, or if you have seen V3 and you're like, I really want V3 on DVD, then go for it. you know, or if you're coming into this completely blind, you kind of have no idea, you'd like to get some of these, but you're just not sure where to start, I'd probably get a volume of the original Kikaider. I'd start with the beginning, or actually with the end, because that's where I started. When I first watched the show, the first episodes I saw were the last three in the movie, and I loved it. If you want to buy a set but you can only afford one, then obviously I'm going to say go for V3. If V3 is too expensive, I'd actually recommend Kikaider 01, because once again, as I wrote in the longest article I think I've ever written, I really love that show, and it starts off kind of iffy. Like, I mean, it's not slow. It starts off very fast paced, but it's kind of aimless at the beginning. Like, it sort of has an idea of what it wants to do, but not quite. But it's still very entertaining. But then, a little before the halfway point, it really starts to kind of find its grounding. And the whole, like, last half of the show, I think, is just awesome. I mean, it's got some of the best characters. It's very character-based, more so than plot-based. I mean, there is a story, but, you know, it's pretty simple, straightforward. But just the character interaction and the relationships between the characters really make it worth watching. I think it's got one of the best tokusatsu heroines of the 1970s, and probably of ever, actually. I mean, in terms of just being a, like, straight-up kick-butt interesting character that really gets, you know, gets some development and gets focus and attention and is treated the same way that the guys are treated. I mean, you know, they're all kind of robots, so it's sort of hard to determine the girls and the guys, but they find a way to do it anyway. But, yeah, it's a really cool show. So if you can't go for V3, I'd actually recommend that one. It is a sequel, but it explains its, you know, connections to the original series easily enough, and it's got a really nice little ending. Inazuman Man's pretty good, but like I said, it's basically part one of a two-part series, and if you buy that one, you're gonna have to do a little extra legwork to find the second series, Inazuman Man Flash, which has not been subtitled yet, to my knowledge, and I think no one's really touching that one, partly because it's kind of obscure, you know, comparatively. And partly because nobody knows if JNP is ever going to get the rights to it or not. We're all kind of hoping they will. If they don't, if it's absolutely out of the question, I kind of hope someone will fan sub it someday, just because that's a really cool show too. As with Kikaider 01, I mean, you could actually kind of watch that one on its own and not have to have seen the first series, although they're both worth checking out. But to summarize, I think the JNP DVDs are great. I know they can be a little pricey, but I think they're worth every penny. And the V3 set is top-notch. You know, I mean, they all are, but the V3 one particularly, because I am on it, sort of. My name, at least. Some of my writing is on it, so... Yeah, I would recommend them, definitely. All right, moving over to Twitter. Kikaider Blog says... Would like to hear your take on the music in the Writer Series, songs, BGM, etc. Got all on CD. First of all, yes, I do have, I think, just about every scrap of Writer music that has been released on CD anyway. And that includes things like the SD Writer soundtrack, the Comrade Black song and action drama CD from the 1980s. The music that's used in the end of Ultraman vs. Kamen Rider, which is actually on the Ultraman Towards the Future soundtrack, but it wasn't used in that show, but it ended up being used in the video special. So a bunch of the stock music, which has been released, I think most everybody has that by now, you know, the Decade Black RX stuff, and you hear it used all the time nowadays. But yeah, I do have a lot of Rider CDs. I think there's probably a couple of the more recent ones I may have, because I buy the, I tend to buy the final boxes when they release those, you know, the complete, quote-unquote, complete CD boxes. So if they release anything in addition to those, I might not have it, but I think I probably have about 98-99% of all Rider music that exists on CD anyway. Now, in terms of, you know, how I feel about the music, I would really love to do a whole episode of Rider Break, you know, where I actually play some of the music, like, you know, almost have a music hour or something where I go through the top songs or the top BGM tracks or, you know, so on and so forth, because the music is a big part of the show. I think I've gone on record as saying my favorite Rider song of all time is Lonely Kamen Rider and Let's Go Rider Kick. Those are my top two anyway. But yeah, there are a lot of ones I love, old songs, new songs, obscure songs, so on and so forth. So yeah, that's definitely something I will do in a future episode, I think, is just all about the Rider music. And related to that, Togudeka asks for the next podcast, why don't you talk about the writers of the shows? And yeah, once again, that's a huge topic that deserves its own episode, I think. Or I do know at some point I'd like to just kind of go through, you know, written down as an article, just kind of like list off all the writers and all the episodes and movies they've written since the very beginning, because there are a lot of guys, but there's a lot of them that have written multiple series. Like I said, Igami Masaru, he was basically the main writer for the first couple of Rider series, doing a lot of the big important plot related episodes, and I love everything he's written. So yeah, the writers, I think that's a whole podcast in itself right there, or a bunch of series of articles. I don't know, I could do like a writer's week or something at some point, but that's definitely something I will try to cover at some point in the next year, I think. And Aoi Kurenai RST, which I assume stands for Rising Sun Tokusatsu, which I will once again link to because they're great guys and you should check them out in their podcast, recommended a episode of a certain cartoon series for me to check out, which I will, and I will review it probably in the next episode. It was quite an interesting experience, but that should be a lot of fun. Okay, so we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I'm actually going to get into Kamen Rider Christmas episodes.
Many people enjoyed Christmas night. Hey! クリスマスに浮かれた人たちをネオショッカーは次から次へと襲った。
Okay, we're back, and now I'm going to take a little time to talk about Kamen Rider Christmas episodes, or episodes that involve Christmas in some capacity. This is not going to be a comprehensive list or like a complete summarization of everyone or something like that. This is just kind of my general, like, off the top of my head thoughts. You know, of course I went back and watched these over again before doing this, but yeah, so it's just kind of going to be my brief thoughts on the various ones that the various Christmas tie-in episodes and appearances of Christmas in Kamen Rider anyway. So I guess we'll start off at the beginning with episode 39 of the original series, which is probably the most famous, I would say, of the old Rider Christmas episodes anyway. In no small part because it's one that I reviewed, I believe. And it is a lot of fun. I mean, it's just like, it's one of my favorite episodes of the series, which, as you know, is no small feat because I love that show like a brother. So yeah, but the episode 39, the Christmas episode, is the last episode of sort of the third arc of the show, which is Colonel Zol. He's the original first kind of long term Rider villain under the Great Leader, who up to that point he's really only kind of just been a voice that we hear sometimes. So Colonel Zol is like the very first real reoccurring Rider villain who kind of set the stage for like everyone since, you know. I mean, nowadays we got Scorpion Zodiarts, Libra Zodiarts, last year we had the Greed, you know, all those guys, they really kind of can be traced back to Colonel Zol, I think. Now, if you've only seen the Movie Wars Colonel Zol that Narutaki turned into, he was pretty good, I thought, despite the kind of nonsensical story behind him. But, you know, the actor, he did a good job. But, yeah, I mean, when you compare him to the original, he looks like a Disney princess by comparison. I mean, the original Zol is just a mean bastard. Like, in his first episode, he kicks Rider 2's butt, pretty much. I mean, or he kicks Ichimonji's butt anyway, and Taki. And those are not guys that you want to mess with, to put it lightly. You know, and he gets away. He does what very few Rider villains do, which is, you know, he kind of gets to screw over the good guys and get away laughing in the end. From that moment on, it's pretty much, it's war. War has been declared. So he's the main villain for a big chunk of the show, and in episode 39, he kind of finally has his final grand scheme, which, to put it as easily as I can, involves Nazi werewolves. And, that's that's probably all you need to know. I mean, if you have not seen it yet, check it out. I don't think it's been subtitled yet. I do know Kit Subs is doing the original series. They're doing a great job of it. And I think they're up to episode 23 now. I'm not sure, but yeah, 39, still got a ways to go on that one. But, you know, you'll get to enjoy the whole Colonel Zol era before that happens. yeah, it's a load of fun. And, you know, one little thing I have to mention is that it is one of the Kamen Rider episodes featuring a foreign actor named Enver Altenby, who is, like, hands down my favorite foreign guy to ever appear in Tokusatsu show, I think. Not because, I mean, he's an okay actor. I think most of the time he's dubbed over, and he always just kind of has bit roles. Like, in this, he plays a German officer who gets blown up in a helicopter, basically. But, I don't know, just the fact that he appears, like, in everything. Like, he's always there. He's kind of like the go-to guy in a crowd scene or something. Or I know he's in the episode, the King Joe episode, Ultra 7, where, like, there's a ton of foreign actors appear as diplomats that get shot and blown up and assassinated and stuff like that. He's one of those guys. He appears later on in the original Kamen Rider series as a different character. I don't know, I was kind of get a kick out of seeing him. So he's in this, along with a whole bunch of other guys at the end, who suffer a rather painful death, I would say. But anyway, yeah, it's the last episode for Colonel Zol. He's a great character, has a great final battle with Rider 2, who uses the good old Rider punch. And shows up at the end in time to hand out toys to the kiddies, including some Kamen Rider merchandise, because really, that's what it's all about. That episode's a lot of fun. It also has the distinction, I believe, of actually airing on Christmas, which is pretty cool. It's something that is finally happening again this year, with Forze. It's going to air on actual Christmas Day. So moving on, we have V3, episode 45 and 46, a two-part Christmas episode. And actually, there's a lot of Rider Christmas stories that are two-parters, which is kind of an unusual thing to do, I guess. Usually, you're used to, like, the special Christmas episode being, like, a one-time thing, but no, they stretch it out over 2 weeks and make it a very traumatic Christmas. I guess the original series really kind of started this tradition, you know, quote-unquote tradition, of the Christmas episodes often seem to be kind of important to the plot in most cases. They're either, you know, they're either near the end of the series, so things are starting to go down, or, you know, in the case of the original, we had a major villain is defeated, and the next episode kicks off like a new arc. So, yeah, in these two episodes... feature probably the most famous confrontation between V3 and Rider-Man, because this is the next story after Rider-Man's debut storyline, where they kind of, you know, they didn't quite get along, but in this one they actually really come to blows, and it's got a great setup to it. The whole, what happens is Destron has an evil Santa, who is actually called Black Santa, because he's like Santa, but he wears black. But he can change to, you know, regular Red Santa, too, because that's how that works. Anyway, so he kidnaps a bunch of kids that Destron is going to turn into, like, their evil Destron Junior squad or something. And, you know, I always kind of get a kick out of when the bad guys do something like that, because it's a silly idea in theory and, you know, and in execution, too, I guess, but... when you really stop and think about it, it's also a pretty horrific idea, because I remember Ultra 7 did an episode like this where this alien guy is going to take control of kids with toys, pretty much. And the way he explains it is that, you know, who's gonna shoot kids? If you have kids who have been brainwashed and been given, you know, real guns and stuff, and they're marching on, you know, the cities of the world, what are people going to do about it? You know, so then when you transplant that idea into Kamen Rider, you know, how does the hero deal with something like this? And, you know, they've always kind of been able to dance around the issue because the plan always fails and the kids are saved and all that. But I suppose a particularly dark writer might think, you know, yeah, let's do the story where the kids are actually, you know, irreversibly turned evil. How does the hero deal with that? I don't know. Maybe it's a good thing that we never see that done, but... yeah, it's a pretty creepy idea when you think about it. Anyway, you know, so that's the evil plan. And Yuki Joji, being, you know, the good guy that he is, he's trying to save the kids. And Destron pretty much forces him into this situation where they say, well, we'll release the kids if you help us kill V3. Now, at this point in the show, Yuki, or Rider-Man, he still thinks that Destron is... basically a good thing, and this has always been one of the most interesting aspects of the character in the V3 series anyway, is the fact that he doesn't think the bad guys are really that bad, because he's coming in from the opposite side. You know, I mean, we come into the show knowing that Destron is evil because they killed Kazami's family, and we see them do all these horrible things and all that, but you know, this is a guy who, he was down on his luck, pretty much, and they helped him out. They, you know, they gave him a home, and they're like a family to him, almost. So he, you know, the leader of Destron is like a father figure to him. So he can't believe that they're doing these horrible things. And he, you know, in his mind, he says, well, it's just martial armor, because he's a bastard, and, you know, he's the one that's doing all this stuff. And you gotta, you know, take him out and restore Destron's honor and all that. So he has this big showdown with V3 that is just, like, seriously, you know, emotionally charged. Great acting between him, you know, Miyuchi and Yamaguchi are great guys. You know, and then it seeks into this battle between V3 and Rider-Man, where, you know, despite being at a disadvantage because he's just a regular guy with a bionic arm, Rider-Man, he actually manages to give V3 a pretty intense fight because he uses a lot of his arms. And, you know, for the arm aficionados out there, this is where Rider-Man uses the swing arm for the first time. And, you know, it ends with this really intense battle where V3 gets crushed by a tractor or something, a bulldozer, some big piece of farm equipment. And, you know, of course, Destron's actually evil and all that, so they're, you know, they try to trick Rider-Man, too. And the next episode has them kind of resolving things a little bit. I mean, they don't quite become best buddies until, you know, another story or two from now. But they kind of, you get the first real hint that Rider-Man and V3 will get along at some point, and that Yuki is, you know, V3 or Kazami has from the beginning believed that this guy is different than the rest of Destron, and that he's, you know, he is a good guy inside, and he's worth saving, I guess you could say. But yeah, that's a really cool episode, or a really cool fight scene anyway. As for the rest of the episode, I mean, or the episodes, they're pretty good. Lots of great action. The second part, 46, has probably one of the best Yuki Joji moments ever. It comes near the end, before the final fight scene, when he pulls the old, you know, disguise as one of the bad guys and sneak into the base. But the way in which they reveal it, you know, it kind of cracks me up, because it's like, it's so perfectly done, and Marshall Armor's reaction is like, "You son of a bitch!" Like, yeah. There's also a really cool rhino monster who is the guy that turns into Black Santa. Who I remember, he was one of the characters that they had in the V3 PlayStation game. And in that game, every character had an alternate form. So, you know, like all the riders would be a human guy first. Then you could hench in and become the rider, and so on and so forth. So you could actually play as Black Santa and have him, you know, dropkick people and stuff. So that was cool. So yeah, it's a pretty good two-parter. I mean, you kind of got to watch it in the context of the Rider-Man storyline, I think, more so than just as a Christmas episode, because one thing you'll probably notice about a lot of these Christmas stories is how, you know, the connection to Christmas is very tenuous. Like, it's really just used as kind of a backdrop. There's no, you know, feel good, goodwill to all men, you know, stuff going on. I mean, it's the same rider action that we're used to usually. So there you go. But yeah, that's a good storyline. I'd definitely check it out. All right, and moving on from there, we have there was no X Christmas, unfortunately. Because it was not airing when Christmas time rolled around. There was no Amazon Christmas either. And Stronger did not have a Christmas episode because Christmas fell right between the second to last and the final episode of Stronger. So I don't think they would have had time to do any Christmas stuff then. But I guess that's a pretty good, you know, present, right? You know, you got the all seven riders teaming up and Tachibana and everything, so can't go wrong with that. So yeah, the next real Christmas episode is a couple years later in New Kamen Rider, or Sky Rider, episode 12. And probably after the original series one, this would be my favorite, I think, Christmas episode. And I know I reviewed this one before. To sum it up briefly, this episode has Sky Rider breaking into a Neo Shocker base to rescue a bunch of guys. And then he's got to fight his way out. And that's pretty much the whole story, and it is so much fun. first of all, this episode has a guest actor, whose name is Fujiyama Koji, I believe, who, if you watch the old Gamera movies, like the Showa Gamera movies, he turns up in almost every one of them, like in some role. He's, you know, a general, or he's a kid's father, or something in the very first one. He's the guy, like, working in the train yard that, you know, grabs the kid before he gets on the train that's going towards Gamera. His most famous role is probably in Gamera versus Barugon, where he's the bad guy. He's just a complete monster. Like, he's just a terrible guy. But, I mean, he's a great actor, but he just plays this awful guy, this just total bastard that you really hate. And you really kind of, you got to cheer when he gets what's coming to him at the end, where he gets, well, I'll let you watch the movie, but yeah, he's a great actor. But anyway, he's in this as this kid's father who gets kidnapped by Neo Shocker, and, you know, it's just a bit role, but I don't know, there's something funny about seeing him in this. But anyway, yeah, this one's just, this episode's a lot of fun, because it really, it spends a lot of time just kind of showing us how the bad guys work, in a way, because we get this big base, which I don't know where they filmed some of the location stuff, but I'd like to find out, because it's cool. It's like a power plant or something, because there's generator rooms, there's a whole, you know, 1979, like, control room and everything. But, you know, we basically just get to see what, like, the day-to-day life of Neo Shocker is like, and the level of hatred that they have towards Kamen Rider, because they have, you know, a target range, you know, for training and stuff like that, where the targets have been made to look like Sky Rider, which there's just something really cool about that, like how petty and how much they hate him. But there's a really interesting slug monster guy who's got some cool powers, and you know, once again, the connection to Christmas is a bit tenuous, where he turns into a really ugly looking Santa at the beginning to kill some people. And that's pretty much it. Like, in the very beginning of the episode is on Christmas Eve, and at the end, the guy, when the guy is freed and he comes home and he gives the kid a present from Sky Rider. But yeah, I mean, it's not exactly the most like Christmassy Christmas episode, but it's still a lot of fun. And there is there is a nice kind of like subplot that really gets into Kamen Rider lore, I guess, which is how you could, you know, effectively fight the Kamen Riders, which is, you know, in this case, stopping them from transforming, because the slug monster guy, Namekagin, he sprays Sky Rider's belt with this goop when he's trying to transform the stuff that hardens, so, you know, the fan can't spin around in his belt, so he's unable to transform. So you got Scuba running around with this belt, with this gunk on it, and he's still, like, kicking butt and everything, but he's like, how the hell am I going to get out of this one? And the way he eventually does is kind of funny, because it's like, it's one of those wonderful, you know, almost like Kikaider, where Jiro will be saved by some random accident or, like, you know, incident that the bad guys could never have counted on happening, but there it is, and that's the magic of television. So yeah, that's a really fun episode. It has been subbed by Kit Subs. I would definitely check it out this Christmas, because it's a blast, and Sky Rider is a great show. Sky Rider is a great rider. So there's that. And moving on from there, we have Super One Episode 10, where it's, despite the title, which is, you know, it's the Christmas present from the devil and all that, the Christmas aspect of this one, I think, is pretty much limited to, like, one scene where the monster is disguised as Santa Claus at one point. But other than that, it's a pretty, it's an interesting episode, because it involves a lot of dreams and a taper monster. And yeah, I can't really explain the whole connection between tapirs and dreams in Japan. Someone else out there probably knows more about it than I do. All I know is that there's this belief that the tapir, which is this, you know, this mammal with kind of a snout, eats dreams or something like that. And in this case, he's giving nightmares to Super One. And you know, if you like Super One, you'll love this episode, because it's got all the usual stuff. You know, there's the training montage with the school and the teachers and everything, and Super One uses his hands and all that. It's, you know, it's pretty good. It's, again, as far as the Christmas content, very minimal, but it's still a lot of fun as an episode. So yeah, that one's worth checking out too, I think. Okay, so moving on from there. Sadly, there is no, as far as I remember, no Black Christmas episode. At least as far as I remember. And I do want to clarify, I have a terrible memory at times, so I may completely skip over one or two. If I do, I'm sorry. Just leave it in the comments or something. Black RX, there's an episode that aired on Christmas Day, although I cannot for the life of me remember if it was a Christmas episode. I think it was Episode 10. I don't remember that one very well, but I'll be sure to watch it right after this. So, yeah, after that, Kuga had the New Year's special, of course, but I don't remember any Christmassy stuff. I think the next major, if you want to call it a Christmas episode, is Ryugi 47, which is right near the end, you know, right before kind of the final storyline. Arguably, it's the point where episode final would have come in, I guess, you know, if you believe episode final is the true ending of this TV series, as I do, then it would have come in somewhere around there. But Yeah, I kind of hesitate to call this a Christmas episode because it's in the background. You see Yui and Shinji decorating the tree and stuff like that, but really, they're kind of in full-on plot mode by this point. They're, you know, moving ahead with the story of how everyone's lining up into place for the finale. Shinji really can't bring himself to fight with Ren anymore, although he wants to save Yui and so on and so forth. You know, it's pretty good, but I don't think you could really just watch it on its own as like a Christmas episode and be like, that was, you know, the best holiday I've ever, you know. You gotta be watching Ryuki, you know, as a whole series, I think, to kind of get that one in its full context. I mean, it's still a good episode on its own, and it features the demise of Tiger's monster, but yeah, it's not exactly like, it doesn't really fill you with holiday cheer, but I don't think many of these Rider episodes do. Yeah, skipping ahead a couple series, because unfortunately I don't recall any Christmas episodes again until Kabuto, which had another two-parter in 45 and 46, which also marks the final story for Sasword. It's also the final story for the Cassis Worm character, who is, you know, been around for the last couple, keeps coming back after they kill him, and this is where he's split into two characters. And this is one of the Kabuto storylines that was written by Inoue. And actually, you know, truth be told, I like Inoue's Kabuto episodes. I think, you know, Drake is kind of a divisive character, but I really liked the whole storyline he had with Gon, anyway. You know, I mean, he's kind of a crazy character on his own with the makeup stuff, but yeah, I liked his, you know, I liked his character, at least. I like for the most part, and a lot of his episodes are written by Inoue, and a lot of Sasord's episodes. And Sasord is a character who, you know, admittedly kind of went off the rails for a while, where he's, you know, trying to fit in with the normal people and everything. And he started out as kind of like this real rival character for Tendo, but very quickly kind of becomes comic relief, I think. Semi-comic relief. But at the same time, he's got this very serious backstory to him, which they finally kind of got back to as the series goes on and in these last episodes. And, you know, I think when people say, you know, Kabuto is my favorite series, it's episodes like this that kind of make me, you know, I can see why. Because I think this is a really good two-parter. Like, it's really heavy duty. The last scene is actually pretty beautiful. I mean, the actual, you know, death scene. It's helped tremendously by the fact that they're using music from Godspeed Love, which that movie found a way to turn, like, God Bless America into the most, you know, poignant, moving piece of music ever. You know, if it wasn't already, then even more so now. You know, once again, like, Christmas is really kind of used as a backdrop, the whole idea of, you know, he's going to go out on a date and all that, because, once again, you know, Christmas in Japan is not exactly Christmas in other parts of the world, and it's really, it's always kind of been, at least from my understanding, really a holiday for couples, and, you know, like, people go out on dates on Christmas, and so on and so forth. So yeah, it's kind of nice to actually touch upon that in these episodes is the romantic side of Christmas, I guess. And you know, but as Kamen Rider episodes go, they're pretty good. Lots of great action. I've always kind of had a little bit of a problem with the way they wrote out the Cassis Worm character, where he kind of ends up becoming, or they, I guess, kind of end up becoming sort of just like henchmen for the Scorpio Worm, but. You know, I guess they had to find some way to kill him off because he was just so unbeatable in the episodes before this. So yeah, I mean, you know, when all is said and done, these are two of the Kabuto episodes that I would really recommend. Yeah, I mean, you know, it helps to have watched the series up to this point and gotten an emotionally involved with Sasord's storyline. But yeah, I think these two are really good and. Not much more I can say about them other than that. Just, you know, they're great episodes all around and funny, tragic, action-packed. I mean, it's kind of like this. you know, episodes like these are Kamen Rider firing on all cylinders, I think. And that brings us to Den-O, episodes 45 and 46. And 45 is really the Christmas themed one. I mean, the, you know, it kind of extends over into 46, but 45 in particular because it features the snowman Imagine, who is an interesting design and looks a little like a certain other monster that had just appeared prior to that. You know, I'm sure if you look close enough, you might be able to figure out who it is, but, you know, I'm not going to blame him for that because that's been done before, but, yeah, those two are pretty good. It really, you know, once again, like with the Ryuki episode, we're kind of like in full-on, you know, this is a plot episode by this point. So especially with the second half, you know, you get a lot of stuff with Kai, with what the bad guys are really going after with Zeronos. I believe the second one is the second part of that story is the one where we have the other Sakurai Yuto becomes another Zeronos, and you get the two Zeronoses together. We also get the albino Leo Imagine, if I remember correctly. It was pretty cool, and it's kind of become like the face of the Imagine now in all later appearances. Like, he was there at the table in Let's Go Kamen Riders. Like, he's considered the big guy, I guess. You know, and these ones, actually, they do feature some pretty good Christmas content in regards to, like, what they're doing on the Den Liner, celebrating and stuff like that. And even in the second half, too. Like, I guess if you're looking for, you know, Christmassy content, then these episodes are pretty good overall. And, you know, and there's some good action in them. It's sort of the same thing with the Kawato episodes, really, where, it, like, you know, when people say Den-O is my favorite series, I look at episodes like these, and I can kind of see why, because really, these two were pretty top-notch in my book. You know, everything that you like about Den-O, I think, is here, because you got the goofiness, but you also got the seriousness of it. Because, I mean, Den-O, when it wanted to be, it could be a very serious or straightforward show. I mean, it took its plot seriously, which was nice, because, you know, having all the silliness and the wackiness and all that, the comedy, I think it works. I've always kind of felt the comic relief characters, they only work if you care about them beyond just being comic relief. Like, it's kind of hard to say. Like, well, let's take Momotaros. Momotaros, you care about what happens to Momotaros because he's involved in a serious side of the show. I mean, there are times when he can get killed, when something might happen to him. You know, he has conflicts with Ryotaro and things like that. And, you know, he's got a life beyond just being, you know, goofy antics and stuff. And this is more evident, I think, in the show than in most of the movies, except really Final Countdown. I mean, that was the one where they really built up this whole fact that Momotaros was going to get screwed over at one point. I mean, it was in all the previews and stuff. You know, he's bleeding sand out everywhere and stuff. You know, which really helped kind of sell the movie, the idea that, you know, could Momotaros actually die this time? And, of course, you know, now he's pretty much invincible. But, you know, back then, it actually kind of worked. And in this series, it worked, too. The whole idea that Ryotaro could lose his friends forever. And, just Den-O the show, it really kind of, it did a good job of making you care about at least most of the characters, because as wacky and silly as they could be, they were grounded in a way, and you cared about what happened to them. I cared anyway. I'm sure there's some people out there that are like, the hell with Den-O, but, you know, I cared. And these episodes really kind of touch on why you care about them, or at least in regards to Yuto and Idy. You know, what their story is and how important they are, what their significance is to the whole story. And actually, if you like Kai, then and these are pretty good episodes for him, too, because he's doing a lot of stuff and really comes off as this psychopath, creepy villain, when a lot of the times in the show, he could kind of be not the most impressive writer villain, I think it's safe to say, but... But in these two, he's really good. And as with the Ryuki episode, like I mentioned, this is right before the end. So the last scene of episode 46 is really cool. Like, it really builds up the big threat that's about to come. And the next couple episodes are great. So I'd give him a shot. Like, actually, since everybody kind of knows what happens to Denno now, because Denno has come back again and again, if you're not that hot on Denno, the TV show, I'd almost recommend, like, jump ahead and watch the last 10 or 11 episodes, like, from 40-ish on. Because they're all pretty solid, and things get intense. And, you know, if you really enjoy them, you can always go back and watch the earlier stuff. I mean, that's just kind of my feeling, is that it's okay to jump ahead sometimes. And then, you know, you can go back and fill in the gaps. So, yeah, I'd recommend them. I'd say check them out. All right, so, lastly, since I can't think of too many other Christmas-related episodes after that, but there is a little stuff in the Begins Night portion of Movie Wars 2010, mainly just at the beginning, you know, Shotaro and Philip and everybody there throwing a little Christmas party. And, you know, it's kind of expected, since considering this is the writer's show that has a character whose name is Santa-chan, and who pretty much existed to give out presents to people, or, you know, plot devices and so on. You know, of course they got to touch on Christmas, and I believe this is where the famous breasts or legs line comes from. But yeah, this is pretty good, and I think I said this before when I reviewed Movie War, but this was really kind of where I first got the whole, like, Watcherman and Santa characters, because in the show, I don't know, I never really took to them. Like, you know, I get the whole idea of giving Shotaro these informants, and they are kind of funny and all that, but I don't know, I just always thought, like, they could so easily have just been, like, one character, or two characters or something, or, you know, or a character who is more involved in the plot. Like, Shroud, I thought, was really cool, because she was this enigmatic figure who knew things, and I like those kind of characters. Like, but here, you know, I actually kind of got them, because I got that what they really are around for is you know, they occasionally help out the good guys, but they're also kind of like part of this extended family that Shotaro and Philip have, these, you know, these wacky Futo people. So yeah, I kind of like that. And, you know, this is all just kind of like the setting for the whole back flashback story and everything, but you know, it's cool to see it, and nice to have them acknowledge it, because the Movie War movies come out in December, you know, right just before Christmas usually. So there you go. And now, of course, we've got Forze, which will be having its Christmas episode this weekend, I believe. So like I said, you know, if I forgot any, I'm sorry. I'll try to correct that at least next episode. At least if there's any I forgot, I'll mention them then. But that's kind of my brief rundown of Kamen Rider Christmas episodes, anyway. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this episode of Rider Break. Like I said, this thing's still a work in progress, so I'm always open to new ideas for new discussions and topics and things to talk about. I do have an idea of a couple future episodes, you know, new segments I'd like to have and things like that, but it's all up in the air at this point. So, yeah, as far as upcoming stuff, at least on the site, before the end of the year, I'd like to do some kind of final kind of recap of 2011, because this was a big year for Kamen Rider. I'm still not sure. I might do that as a podcast, or I might do it as just a written article, but yeah, that's something I'll probably be working on the next couple of days. And a few of the things I mentioned last time, might get a little sneak peek at those pretty soon, but in the meantime, yeah, that's it for this episode of Rider Break. Thank you to everyone out there who listened to the last one. Thank you for listening to this one. Thank you for all the questions and the comments. You know, everything, every little bit of advice and praise helps out. I hope that I continue with this next year. I certainly want to. I'm going to try at least to get out, you know, an episode every other week, if not every week, because I certainly could, and it's, there's always something to talk about with Kamen Rider every week, I think, so I don't know. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. That wraps it up for this episode of Rider Break. Have a happy holiday, Merry Christmas, and a Happy New Year. Kamen Rider がやってきた
クリスマスにやってきた。
ライダーライダークリスマス、みんなでみんなで変身だ。
君もライダー僕もライダー、ショッカー軍団怖くない。ジャンプでゴー、キックでゴー、いつも正しいものが勝つ。
ライダー